Okay, good morning. We're continuing in Masechet Beitzah. I want to start actually the mission of this morning. I want to start the Gemara this morning after we did the mission last week. There's a lot to discover here. There's a few principles. This is, you know, there's a lot of tremendous gems in this Gemara, not just in terms of like, in terms of lumpish stuff, but just in terms of certain principles, certain Shas principles, certain halacha principles that are just vital as being a Jew. And when they come up, they're worthwhile spending time on because it's not just Gemara related, they're like, you know, regular halacha related, obviously, especially pertaining to Yom Tov and to Shabbos. So, before I actually want to read the Gemara, I want to talk about the concept of Muksa for a second, because that's what the Gemara is going to talk about. So just a quick intro to Muksa. If someone were to ask, you know, in the, sometimes, like yesterday, for example, I was walking with my child, and we were talking about the idea of, I don't know how it even came up in conversation, about like fire. It's fire, and then he said, oh yeah, that's Muksa. So creating a fire is Havara, right? Right, that's a problem. So it's not Muksa, it's a Malacha, right? And children often think everything's Asr on Shabbos is like Muksa, 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 even like writing is Muksa. You know, they can't write on Shabbos as Muksa, right? So to tell them not writing is a Malacha, handling a pen is Muksa. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a blanket term.
But it's not even the most applicable one.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know why.
You should tell them everything's like a sore.
Because I guess because like toys and stuff. I guess toys or mark. I don't know.
It's just like.
But either toy's okay or there's something explicitly wrong with it that makes it a sore, so.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure why that's the terminology, but that's what they seem to pick up. It's a good question, but it's like definitely, sociologically, it's correct for children.
Term, yeah.
It's like
right.
The fact that you trait for everything when very few, it's how most of us have probably never even encountered trait meat.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, it could be that.
Maybe in Israel, but.
Right.
In Canada,
so,
why would you ever encounter trait meat?
Right. I think. Yes. When the question we ask us, what the word muksa mean? I said define the word muksa. Where does it come from? What does it mean?
Typically like safeguards.
So let's go to the root word. What's the word of muksa? What does it mean?
The end.
Hukats. What?
Oh, okay. I think it's like as the end.
The end. No. If something which is muksa means could be, but I think there's a better terminology which will help us as within the Gemara a little bit better. So the word muksa, let's use the opposite of muksa. The opposite of muksa is mukhan. So mukhan means prepared. So muksa means it's hukats. From it's been set, it's outside, it's been totally set aside. And I will see in a few minutes that, at least according to Rashi, it's all about a person has no dot. Right? Let me give you an example. A stone. A stone is muksa. But what about if I have a stone and it's on my desk, I use it as a paperweight. It's my paperweight. Yes, it's a stone, but I use it as to hold down my Gemara, my Siddur, my book, on Shabbos, or Yom Tov. Is this muksa? No, so I don't understand. What's the, I don't understand, it's a stone. You just told me stone is muksa.
It has purpose now.
Okay, so here we go. Muksa means it's no function, stones have no function. But if all of a sudden it's functional, so I'm using it for a function. So Josh is saying, no, it's about the item itself, that's functionality.
Within reason.
Right, okay, within reason. But Josh is saying
paperweight because it could violate another
malacha. Like what?
It would have to be something blanking on exactly that because of like tricks like isn't actually us directly. So
like a stamp or something?
Okay, so English is a stamp, you're right. That'd be a good example.
Like if you have
that's a bookmark?
Or like it's,
the
problem with the stamp is it has, again,
as value?
It has money. It has no real value.
Yeah, but it's not a lot of money.
Well, I'm thinking of like
expensive stamp.
Like a stamp, like something.
Oh, like, right.
An actual stamp.
Like, yeah, like a real, like using
ink. Old fashioned stamping pad. Yeah. Like Library of Kropotkin or something.
Sure.
Yeah, it should be Kotev, right? So if you had an item, and you'll say the question is it an intrinsic thing about what do you mean? It's a stone, and therefore it has no function, so it's moksha, or is it all about my intent? We'll see that in a few minutes. But it's clear that moksha, I mean...
You could perform malacha with money, but money in itself is not us or beyond it being moksha.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that. What malacha can you do with money? Right, but that's not, yeah, that's not a deraisa, that's not a deraisa. Making a kinyan, kona. That's only rabbinic. So, what happens is that when we talk about the idea of muksa, it's something which is we're not prepared for. It's not mukhan, right? It's a stone, so I can make the stone functional if before Shabbos or Yom Tov, I say, okay, this is my paperweight. This is my...
But you couldn't do that on Shabbos. You couldn't pick up a stone off the ground.
Oh, very good. Because the reason is because this is what's called Be'er Shvasho. That determines the status of items.
Is that Derabbanan? Or is that...
What do you mean by that?
Is this, like, is it deraisa that you can't designate something on Shabbos as paperweight, or is it Derabbanan?
Well, put it this way. This stone is only Aser Midrabbanan. Mux is only the Rabbana.
Right.
So that you can't designate houses, right? Yes. So the question when Shabbos begins, the status of your stuff, or the stuff that's out there, kind of is determined, right? So this is a paper when Shabbos starts. And we'll see, Mux lechatzi Shabbos, can you have something which can become Mux and not become Mux? We'll see that. We'll see those cases over, either directly or indirectly, through things that are going to come up in the Gemara, and they're going to come up a little bit, and it'll lead to these topics, which are just important because it's good. It's a good mix of conversation. So we take a look at the handout in front of you that I gave you. Again, a brief understanding of muksa. You have different types of muksa. You have what's called klisha malachto le'iser, which means that it's used. For this item is used for something which is aser. So a good example of this is a pen. Why? Because I use a pen to write. So writing is aser, and I have a pen, right? Or a match. That's an example that's given here. A match, right? Your match is used for avara, right? For fire. So the match is a klisha aser, right? A hammer. Hammer is used to bang nails. So it's a kli. Shemalachta is used for something forbidden. Nails is for building, right? So again, that's kind of the theme here, right? So scissors, a hammer. Okay, very good. So all these things.
You can hammer something with a rock also?
Yeah, agreed. So again, if I want to, I can also crack open a nut with a hammer. So it does. So again, but the default setting of my hammer in the basement, which. Pretend to use once a year. Yeah, listen, you can, again, so very good. So a kli shemachto l'iser, if I designate it before Shabbos, meaning I don't want to use a stone, I want to use a hammer.
A match might be a problem.
A hammer? Really?
I mean, you get enough friction on it.
Right. I mean, listen, a pen too, you could accidentally write a pencil. But let's use the examples of this that are clear. As a hammer is a very good example, and the old school clickers for televisions, the remote control, right? So they still have them. They're just not so popular anymore, right? Right. So those are the now mukset machmar chisaron keys is something which I would never want to handle it because it's very precious. So maybe an expensive stamp. An expensive China statue. They're things that you don't handle regularly. You put them on a bookshelf. You put them behind glass, right? Muksa machmas chisaron keys. That they're totally set aside, right? You don't use them. You don't handle them on a Tuesday. Forget about handling them on a Shabbos, right? They're way too precious and expensive. Okay? So that was, those examples of that would be an expensive stab. Right? That you don't usually handle. Not like baseball cards that when you show, even though they're expensive, whatever, right? No, those people show, those would not be moksa.
They're not worth that much anymore.
Yeah, baseball cards don't worth that much. That is true. Or anything alike, anything of that nature that you, you know, like a China statue or a glass, you know, item. Forget the idea of owning a Pesach. That's not for now. But that would be an example of moksa macham in some case. Moksa macham agufo is a stone is a good example of that, right? But it has no function on Shabbos. The average stone has no purpose on Shabbos. Piece of wood, right? Wood, a stone. Those things have no functions for principle on Shabbos. It's not. And again, forget paperweights as because you can use anything for paperweight, right? But your average, what do you use a stone or a piece of wood for in your backyard, right? Small piece of wood that's lying in the grass in your backyard. Well, it has no function at all. So that would be called muksa machmad gufo. Gufo, the item itself, has no function. So that would be a problem. And then you have something which is basis le devar aser. So the item itself is not aser, but becomes aser. The classic example is if I have a tray, and on this tray I light my Shabbos candles. So this tray is permissible. I could put food on it. But here's the problem. I have Shabbos candles on it. So when Shabbos begins, the candles are kindling. So this tray becomes muksa. Why? Because what is this tray supporting? My candlesticks. Hmm. So that is called basis, a base, the devar asur, something forbidden. Doesn't matter. What do we say? When Shabbos started, what was the condition of that tray?
Yeah, we could have in mind that it had served both purposes.
So here's an interesting question. What about if you have candles that are burning on a tray? You have a mind that says, no moksa, no moksa, no moksa. Which wins? Actions speak louder than thought. So, because you have candles kindling on this tray, you could jump up and down all you want and say, no moksa, no moksa, no moksa. But the fact that you're doing something, which explicitly counteracts your thought, says your actions speak louder than intent.
Right.
Okay? So that's an important statement. By the way, there's a trick. And this trick is often used on the holiday of Sukkot. Why? You want to light your candles in your sukkah. Mm-hmm. Don't leave your candles outside. It could snow, it could rain, it's windy. I don't think it gets stolen, but right? So what do? Yeah. You play a trick, a halachic trick, which is permissible. Halacha says if you have a basis, if you have a base for something, and on it is something forbidden, but also something permissible, meaning basis ledavar hamutar ve'asur. So I have candlesticks, but I also put my bencher on there. So now I have a tray. Not my tray is candlesticks, but it has a bencher, a sitter. It had lakat nirot for Shabbat on it. Then it's permissible to move. Why? Because we say, yes, it's true, my candlesticks might be worth $1,000. But it's a sitter. A sitter is priceless. Right? So therefore, you'd say, by the way, that's opening a drawer. How do you open a drawer on Shabbos? You have a pen in the drawer. You also have a sitter in your drawer. How do you open your drawer? The answer is, it's a basis for something which is permissible and forbidden. So the thing that's permissible counters.
The function is also to be open and closed.
The function of tray is to carry things.
Yeah. Just because there's something forbidden in the drawer doesn't mean that it's your intent for it.
Again, your action speaks louder than your intent. On Friday afternoon, if all you have in there is your wallet and your money what else do you have in your drawer? And pens.
That's what he's saying. Then.
And Shabbos starts, Yom Tov begins, bye, Mr. Drawer, can't open it. No, you know, when your glass is in there, when Shabbos starts, you'd be forbidden to open that drawer. There's only things that are usher in that drawer. That's a bus used to the varasar. That's very rare that you have a drawer like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about you. Most people have drawers that are filled with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's why we close them. Right? Yeah. Everyone has like this one drawer in the kitchen that's kind of like the dumping drawer. No?
We have that.
Exactly. There's like a battery, an elastic band. tags for the garbage bags, you know, a key that you have no idea when it opens.
One key?
Yeah, maybe two, right? So you threw your car keys in there, right? I'm not describing, of course, any drawer in particular in my house, but, you know, it happens. Okay.
There was like 40 keys in there.
What was that?
You like 40 keys in there.
Right, right. So that's what we have. Now, what... That's the fourth thing. Now you'll see why this is important in a minute, and why is there a concept of moksha to begin with? So let's again. This is a little bit off tangent, but it'll be really important because it'll help us understand havmina of a Gemara and maybe some of the Rishonim and what they want to say. But also because you mentioned that, why is it us? Why did Chacham? Why did the Rabbi say no moksha? So look at the Rambam in front of you on the handout. Asur chacham letaltel miktat dvarim b'shabbat kedei asher seh b'chol. Chachamim forbid items that are like weekday items. So what do you handle on Shabbos? You handle pens and money and hammers. Bibnei mana gubisur zeh. Why do they do this? Amru uma im hisiru nevi'im v'tzivu shelo yehilu chach b'shabbat. Bitel hatam shnemar b'Torah l'man yenuach. Says the Rambam, listen, is our speech is different on Shabbat? How do I know our speech is different on Shabbat? What's the pasuk? The problem is you're not Sephardic. If you're Sephardic, you'd know the pasuk like this. Yim tashiv mi Shabbat raglecha. That's kiddush on Shabbat day from Isaiah. They read from Isaiah, right? That as the bear davar, I don't even know pasuk of bear, but the Yeshayo tells us there are certain things you can't do. One is your raglecha, your walking has to be different on Shabbat, right? Can't run on Shabbat. You're not allowed to run on Shabbat unless it's
like
tushul, dvar mitzvah, right? Otherwise, you would not be allowed to. Number two would be that your speech, the daber davar, your speech has to be different on Shabbat, right? So not just hiluchach tiabenachat, but also the daber davar, your speech has to be different on Shabbos, right? That doesn't mean no lashon hara. That you can't do even on Tuesday, right? Right? But a person has to speak differently. These are difficult because it's not always the cultural norm, right? It's not always acceptable, but. Sometimes only time to talk. You know, easier to talk business on Shabbos than it is to talk on a Tuesday. We give you more time in shul, where you get to sit next to our friend in finance on Shabbos and not on Tuesday. We have more time to talk about, you know, Bitcoin or something, right? Maybe or marijuana or something, stocks or something. That's what everyone seems to be talking about today. Where I go, we're talking about Bitcoin and marijuana stocks. I don't understand. Okay, that's why I'm a rabbi. Because I don't understand. What? Don't mix those up. 2018, will Bitcoin crash and so will marijuana stocks? I don't know. They say not true. They say the ones that are good will survive and the rest of them, 85% will all disappear and a couple will become like Google. That's what my friend told me last night.
Yeah. For marijuana stocks?
Bitcoin, about everything.
Bitcoin people are saying are going
to plummet.
Yeah.
What do I know? There's a lot of them. There's competition. That's what they're...
Unscalable.
I don't... I mean, I understand the whole idea behind it.
It's not people can, like, but, thing is, like, people can
whenever the government steps in and just starts regulating stuff, whatever they go with is going to be what wins.
Yeah, because it's regulated. People can do, like...
But look what happened with Google, right? Google made it. Google managed... Most .coms crashed, and Google made it. Why'd they make it? Or Amazon?
Google. They both provided things that no one else did at the time.
Really?
Well, Google was by far the best web search, and Amazon...
No, but Amazon used to just do books. I remember when Amazon just did books. I said, books? Nebuch, you have no chance of surviving.
Amazon basically defined what e-commerce is.
Right, but they didn't. It took them years.
The book system was ahead of its time for any kind of e-commerce.
Okay, this is way off topic. But if Amazon doesn't switch from books, they're dead. Dead. But they had the tremendous chachma.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a brilliant idea. And they bought planes and... Right?
Now they own tons of companies.
They own everything. They own, like, warehouses, and they're shipping in one day.
Yeah.
I can order... In New York City, you can mamish... Here, too? So same day?
Depends on the item,
right? If it's in their warehouse...
If you order early enough in the day, yeah.
You can get it...
The same day?
Yeah.
No.
I've been on the thing, it's like...
You can order in the morning.
I never did.
After 10 a.m., it's harder.
Yeah, it's like if you're...
Before 10, you can get it by 5.
You look at something and be like, yeah, we'll deliver this by 9 p.m. today.
That's crazy.
If it's, it has to be in Toronto.
Wow. Right,
like
right.
Like Mississauga Warehouse.
That's crazy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that before.
A certain amount of money, that's why I never... Because it's always like, what's the minimum 35, and I'm like, okay.
Well, I have what's it called? I have Prime.
Packages of socks to get this today.
Right. Okay, that's not our point. What was our point? I have no... Oh, I know. Sichar Chol. That was my fault. Right?
There you go.
Sichar Chol also during Gemara Shir.
Exactly. Sunday.
Only on Sunday. So that's... So if the Yeshayahu talks about our speech and our walking and our travels and how we move has to be different on Shabbos, for sure what we handle, for sure what we engage with needs also to be different on Shabbos. That's what the Rambam is suggesting here. That... Kavachomer, our tiltul on Shabbos, cannot be the same as Bechol. And again, what would happen? Imagine the following scenario. Imagine if we had Shabbos and there was no muksa. You could organize your garage, clean your room. The Shabbos wouldn't look like Shabbos. The entire Shabbos, the way we know it. And this is, to me, the brilliance of Chazal was they understood not just the technicality of Shabbos, but the way, and this was why, by the way, certain things, you know, they say, oh, this is not Shabbos Dick. Come on, Rabbi. Tell me why it's Asr. No, you don't understand. Not Shabbos Dick is what makes Shabbos. In many ways, Muksa was created because it's not Shabbos Dick. Mm-hmm. Right? So though people sometimes ridicule that idea, in fact, that's exactly the whole point. That Chazal understood the much bigger picture, not just the micro Shabbos, but also the macro, the big picture Shabbos. Not just the technicality of the malachos, but the bigger picture. And we feel it, right? Especially, and we'll see that in a second, and it's, by the way, when many people spoke about the whole iPhone and this and that, the whole joke with the app, you know, all this, this goes back years ago with the app and the Shabbos app and half Shabbos, that, all those things we know. Imagine if you could use your phone on Shabbos, it'd be a disaster. Listen, Moshe Feinstein in the beginning said, don't even use timers on Shabbos, right? You know, it's not going to look. Lights on and off. Who's going to? Yeah, that's a long time ago, right? We're a different world today. So, but I think that is really what creates Shabbos. So you're going to see why Moksha plays such an important role in that. Like I said, if you could spend your Saturdays cleaning your garage, like my neighbor does, you know? So that would not, that would have a totally different view of Shabbos. Okay. And he said, you'd sit in your house all day, and you would basically, you know, do things, and you lacked l'man yenuach. I think this is another important idea. The purpose of Shabbos is l'man yenuach, or one of them, right? You need to rest, right? Not being so, don't be so, and we live in a world where we're always running. Just being. It's a day of being, not necessarily a day of doing. And I think that's tremendously valuable, even more so in 2018 than perhaps in times of Chazal. But another reason, and this is fascinating, look at Yud Gimel. It's taking longer than I thought, but this is it's amazing. This is it, right? For od kishe yivaker v'yitotel kelim shemlachtan le'isur. Let's say you'd be allowed to handle pens, right? If shar shi tasek behemaz devlim lacha. Oh, so here's another different reason. So we see another totally different reason. The first reason was cleaning the garage. Second, I call it cleaning the garage reason. The second reason is no. What happens if you'd be allowed to handle a pen? What might you do?
Right.
So that's a different reason. So again, there are different. So the different types of muksa lead. There are based on different reasons, right? So cleaning your garage is based on the man yenuach or a kavachomer. And here's another reason. What about moving pens? The answer is, if you'd be allowed to move a pen, maybe you'd write with that pen. You have to handle if you would handle a Torah. You'd handle a hammer. Maybe you'd come to, you know, bang in a few nails. So let's continue reading. This is a good one. You like this one. So some people are not artisans. Some people actually don't work. Can you believe that? Ella Vitalin Kol Yomeinu. They're just butt lungs. They just sit
lazies.
They do nothing. They're not out in the fields. They're not planting and harvesting. And they're just, you know, on computers all day long, clicking bitcoins and stuff, right? This is an unbelievable statement. You need Shavita Nikeras. You need, so again, your Tuesday looks like your Shabbos. There's no difference. On Tuesday, you don't do anything productive, and on Shabbos, you're unproductive. And by the way, this is true in the modern era. I mean, we don't live in an artisan world, right? I'm not, you know, if you were a shoemaker, if you were a seamstress, if you were a carpenter, so your Shabbos looked very different than your Tuesday. Looked very different. But if you don't do those things, and all you did was you sit in an office, and you're in meetings all day long, you're not a Baal Malacha. Right? Or if you're unemployed, for sure you're a butler, right? So he goes on to say, what's the issue with this? Or if you know, if you're a philosopher, right? What are you doing? So you need what's called Shvita Nikeras. The Fichach, Shvita Medabrim Elu, Yeheshu. Lost my line. Shvita Medabrim Elu, He Shvita Hashaveb B'chol Adam. Medabrim Elu, Nigu B'Isra Tiltu. That he said. That's why we were asked to be taught all things, because I want my Tuesday to be. I want my Shabbos to be different than my Tuesday. So I need Shavita Nikara. Stop handling pens and hammers and those items. V'asru shelo you taught to Adam b'Shabbos ela kelim atzarech lahem k'moshi bayar. Handle things that you need. Your apple, your oranges, your chicken, your sitter. Handle things that you need, not things that you do not need. Okay. The next thing that the Ravid actually mentions, and he says there's another reason why you of Tiltua. This is wow. You ready? The Tzorach Hotza'a. We're worried that you're going to violate Hotza'a. If you're handling your Bluetooth earpiece, you might come to carry it. Interesting. Why aren't we worried about your orange? About your coffee? How come those items are not worried you could be metalta? I'm not quite sure. But says the Ravid here, I'll give you another reason. Because if all you do is handle any item, every item, you walk out with it. And there's hotza'a. I guess the rationale is, if you have to be self-selecting which items you can handle, you're much more conscious, and if you're much more conscious, maybe you won't lead to hotza'a. I don't know, that's my... What was that? Okay, so that you can argue, right? You know, that's... little plug, right? Most places don't. So, anyways, these are all different. So again, there's different reasons that we see. One, the first reason that we saw in the Rambam, he mentioned, so that call it Shabbos stick, right? That you don't want to make you know, clean the garage on Shabbos. Lamayna nuach. The second reason that we see is that you might come to do malacha. The idea here is also shvita nikeras, as also mentioned. And the other thing that's mentioned in the Ravid, anyways, is Hotzah. Okay, so a number of different reasons why there's Moksa. And by the way, this might be a contradiction. It could be different reasons for different items. Why they ushered pens could be different than why they ushered stones. And why they ushered fancy items that you're worried that you're going to break. Okay, so those are different reasons. With that half-hour introduction to Moksa, which is fine, now I want to read the Gemara. You'll see why. We started this last week. I want to pick it up. And based on what we said, you tell me what the Gemara is saying. The Maya Skinan. Here we go. The Gemara asks, what are we dealing with here? Ilema betarnegolet homedet lachila. If we have a chicky, and this chicken has been designated to eat. Now remember, it's Yom Tov. Right? It's the holiday of Sukkot. It's Shavuos. Fleshik's on Shavuos. Right? So it's Yom Tov, and it's been designated to eat. Meaning, this chicken is my lunch or my dinner. So I was going to go out at 2 in the afternoon, right? And I was going to shecht, or at 10 in the morning, or 5 in the morning. I was going to shecht at 5 in the morning, get everything ready, I can go to shul, right? Or maybe I went to 5 o'clock minyan, and now before my family, right, I was in a shakhta, prepare and eat it for lunch, whatever the case may be. All of a sudden I go, and I see, wow, there's an egg, I laid an egg, a golden egg. So the question is, what's the status of the egg? So Bet Hillel says, what did Bet Hillel say in our mission last week? What's the status of the egg?
Don't eat it.
Don't eat it. What does Bet Shammah say? Eat it, te'echel, right? Remember? That was last week. So, Ilei Ma'abatanam, if we're referring to a situation where the item, where the egg came from a chicken, and this chicken was designated to be eaten, ask the Gemara, Matamah the Bet Hillel. Why would Bet Hillel forbid the egg? After all, Ochla te'efrat, who? V'zoichel. Didn't I say to myself when Yom Tov began, this chicken is for dinner tonight? Right? So the egg wasn't part of the chicken? So why should it be forbidden? Rashi, look at the first two words. Ha'omedet l'achila. Designated to be eaten. Look at the next two words. What are the two words? Now, here we go. What's the status of a regular animal on Shabbos Yom Tov? Muksa. Animals are muksa. What? Okay, what if it's yours? And maybe pets are not muksa. Maybe, right? Right. But again, the average doggy, the average dog, your average... Let me put it this way. You have fish. Your goldfish is muksa. Goldfish is muksa. Right? Your parrot... is muksa, whatever, if it's yours, parents are, animal, Bali Chaim or muksa, right? Now, Rashi says, since it is omedet l'achila, when Yom Tov began, what was your intent? What was your da'at? What was your intent?
To eat the chicken.
You're going to eat this chicken. So there's no difference between this chicken and this orange. You're going to eat this orange on Yom Tov? You're going to eat the chicken in Yom Tov. Yes, the chicken has to go through a much more complicated process till it's you can eat it, but those are just technicalities. Right? So, I'm allowed to shech the chicken on Yom Tov. After all, this was our topic that we had, right? The first part, last semester, right? Fresh food is always better. Yom Tov is about eating, right? It's fresh, you can't compare. We know. We just spoke about this, right? That's what Rashi says. Now, Ochel Defrat. Look at this. Take a look at Rashi. Ochel Shenifrat. This food was separated. Nechibro. So this food was separated from the chicken. So what's the Gemara saying? What's being analogous here? Rather, Rashi deals with Gemara Chuli, which is not, it's just proving something, but it's essentially what we said already. What is it saying? Ochla defrahu. Here's an egg. What do we, how do we see this egg? What would be its status of this egg?
I came from a chicken on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm. Yom Tov. Right. Oh, by the way, how come on Shabbos, since you can't shecht, so it's the egg's irrelevant, right? So, but on Yom Tov, since I can shecht, I can designate this chicken as food. So that it's basically like this orange.
So it'll be part of the chicken.
So it's part of the chicken. That's the language of the Gemara. Now you appreciate the Gemara says, Ochla de Ephrat who? It comes from the Ephrat. It's from the chicken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meaning, what's the difference if I eat the leg of the chicken? Or if I eat the egg of the chicken? It's part of the chicken. When I shecht the chicken at 10 a.m. in the morning on Yom Tov, or if I cut the chicken and remove its leg and eat it, but it's the same thing. Chicken's a chicken leg, a chicken, it's the same thing. Okay, so it's separated from it. So what? That's the Gemara seems to imply. Ella, so the Gemara says, and remember, so why would Bet Hillel say it's Aser? It should be Mutter. Now the Gemara will give the flip side argument.
Ella betarnegolet hameda gadol bitzim. Oh! So it must be that we're referring to not a chicken that's been designated to be eaten, but rather what is the status of this chicken before Yom Tov? Because if it would be a chicken that was the status of being eaten, then Bet Hillel would have to agree it's permitted. Why? It's the egg is part of the chicken. My intent was, I'm eating this chicken on Yom Tov, I can't eat the egg. So how could Bet Hillel say it's forbidden? So it must be
chicken
a chicken that was designated before Yom Tov again for eggs. So now I go to the chicken coop at 10 in the morning and I see a freshly laid egg. That egg, Bet Hillel says, is forbidden to eat. But Shammai says it's permitted to eat. That's where we are right now in the Gemara.
Yeah, I feel like it should be more so mutzer to eat that egg. If it was a chicken that was designated to lay eggs.
Why? Explain.
Because you know before Shabbos that this is my chicken laying egg. This is my egg.
Very good.
I use this chicken for my scrambled eggs in the morning.
Right. So it's Yom Tov. I make eggs for my wife in the morning. Right. That's a good move. Right. I make eggs for your wife in the morning.
She appreciates it.
So you went out at 5 o'clock to get a fresh egg. You do it every day. So you're going on Yom Tov. So why is it that Bet Hillel forbids this egg? After all, good, good, good. Ask well. You know that.
This is my chicken, my egg.
This is my
egg chicken.
So say it better. What's my intent that every single morning I go? By the way, you're making an assumption.
Right.
What's your assumption?
It's going to lay an egg.
Do chickens lay eggs every single morning?
Probably not. Do they? I don't know.
Oh.
Chicken.
What?
We looked it up. It's on the chicken.
Right, didn't we see, what did we see last week? The average chicken lays an egg.
Maybe anywhere from like a couple of days to like one a week.
Oh, we did see a couple of days?
I don't remember exactly.
Well, for sure in the modern world, we definitely give them steroids if they produce eggs every day.
Yeah, but
sure.
Barn eggs, doesn't it require like, an egg is a baby chicken, so it requires like the
right, so today though, the eggs that are being hatched, they never get fertilized. They'll never those eggs will never become.
An egg's only baby chicken if it's fertilized, otherwise they just lay the egg.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
It's like any female species that just keeps laying eggs on it.
Really? They just lay eggs without fertilization. They're not going to come nothing.
That's so interesting.
It's not like
it's a bird. Yeah.
It's a bird. It's a bird. It's not a mammal.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, so it's like, if I can say a menstrual cycle, but for a chicken.
Right, no, yeah.
But even
right.
Releases an egg every month.
What was that?
Any human female.
No, I know.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. It's right, the same thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They just
right. That's once a month, I guess chicken.
Right, without, right, exactly. Yeah, without.
More frequently.
Right, without. Fertilization doesn't happen. It's just like an egg of a...
Ah, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's a good analogy there, people. Biology. Biology is important. Okay? So, the... that's what the Gemara is now saying.
Does it matter if
you're going to get your
own? Yeah, okay. Does it matter if the chicken lays an egg every day or not? It could be that I know this. I don't kill this chicken for food because this makes the best eggs. So whenever it lays an egg every whatever it is, a couple of days, that's when I gather up the eggs and that's when I still designate it.
By the way, I just want to show the ochel that for who Tosfot even says this. Ochel shenifred min ochel. So based on right food from food. Okay, what was that?
I was going to say, does it matter if the chicken lays an egg every day or not? Or
it's a very good question.
Like, if as long as you're designating that chicken as your egg chicken, then does it matter if it lays an egg every day or not?
What's
it just happens to be on Yom Tov.
Right. So my dot is, listen, today yes, tomorrow no. Today yes, meaning it happens to be, yesterday's Yom Tov day. I agree. I agree.
Okay.
Not sure it would matter that much. At least not based on this part of the Gemara.
Right.
So then the Gemara seems to say, what type of chicken are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a chicken that... That lays eggs. So then the Gemara asks, well, wait a second, that's true. My time at the Beit Shammai. Muksahi! Oh, that's what we're talking about, muksa. Now, wait a second, what's the Gemara saying here? What's the reason why Beit Shammai permits us to eat this egg? Isn't this chicken muksa? What's the Gemara asking?
I guess what's the status of the chicken?
So again, what's the status of an animal on Yom Tov? It is
muksa.
So since this animal is muksa,
what comes from muksa should be muksa.
Why does Beis Hillel get a pass?
Meaning, I understand Beis Hillel. What comes from muksa is muksa. Why does Beis Shammai say that it is permitted? It should be usser. Meaning, the Gemara seems to suggesting, if I'm going to argue, and this makes sense, the Gemara says, we're referring to a case where the chicken is designated to lay eggs. If that's so, why does Beis Shammai permit this chicken? Permit this egg.
So,
after all, it's muksa. I understand Beit Hillel. The Gemara doesn't even need to ask for Beit Hillel. Why? Here's a muksa item. This came from the muksa item. It's usher. How in the world could Beit Shammai say you can eat this egg? The chicken is muksa. This is muksa. Produces this. It should be usher.
It's only muksa.
Why is it that he permits it? That's the worst question.
It for food, no?
What?
It's only muksa if you don't designate it as an
egg. Again. So what do we say? This chicken is designated to lay eggs.
Right.
So it lays eggs. It's not. We don't. It's not chicken that we eat. So if that's true, this chicken is muksa. It's an animal. Animals are muksa. It's not food. If you tell me it's designated for food, so it's an orange. Okay. The orange has a slice. I can eat the slice. Mm-hmm. The orange. That's what the Gemara said earlier. But now that we're saying that this chicken is designated to lay eggs, the chicken is forbidden because it's an animal. Bale chayim or aser.
But the egg is
so an egg should be, but it comes from it. So again, just like we said before, if I take an egg from a chicken, that was designated to be eaten. So the egg is permitted. Why? The wing of a chicken is permitted. The egg is permitted. It's just food from food. Right? So here, this chicken is aser because it's designated to lay eggs, so it's an animal. Animals are muksa. That's a default setting. I've never intended to eat this animal. It's an animal. This is separated from it. So it should be aser. This comes from muksa. Just like when it comes from food, it's permitted. Now it's coming from muksa.
You could argue that the...
Right? That seems to be the Gemara, right? That seems to be the equation now, right?
You could argue that you only eat the chicken once it's shafted. So if it's not... part of the chicken.
Wait, what are you referring to? If it's like a dobe tzimla or la achila?
Like
nechila
chicken.
Achila chicken.
Until it's shafted, so if it's not, no longer part of the chicken, you can't shaft the egg.
Again, we said originally that it cannot be that this chicken is designated to be eaten, because if it would be, it makes no sense. That Shammai would need to permit to eat in this chicken because it's lachila. So since the egg comes from a chicken, the chicken is permitted to eat, the egg is permitted to eat. So therefore the Gemara says, what then are we talking about a case where this chicken is designated to?
So you can designate it to lay eggs.
This chicken is moksha.
Eat the chicken, find an egg, decide to eat the egg instead and not eat the chicken.
What was that, sorry?
So you can intend to eat the chicken, find an egg, decide to eat the egg instead.
You can intend to eat... What was that? You intend to...
You were intending to eat the chicken.
No, it's not l'achila. It's the gedal beitzim.
I'm saying in this case that it was a chila chicken.
No, we dismissed that. We said there's no reason to usher the egg.
But then you could eat the egg and not eat the chicken and you're still okay.
Yes, you would be. Yes, correct. Of course. No question.
We can't say that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are arguing in two different cases. That they're talking about two different cases that they're not actually arguing.
That, but Shammai argues what, and Beis Hillel argues what?
Yeah.
Explain. What do you mean?
Are they talking about the same case? Or
well, it's hard. Listen, the Gemara, the Mishnah should be talking about the same case because the Mishnah is responding differently. So if they're both, potato, potato. You know what I mean? Like it appears it has to be the same case.
Sometimes we have instances where the Gemara says, "Well, no, it's like Lakasha or something like that." We're like, "Actually, talking about different." They agree on the same case, but
it's hard to imagine this that in the Mishnah that says Beis Shon Dov Yomtov that they really both agree. They're just arguing over what the.
Come on, it's Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. They're always arguing.
But Well, by the Hillel and Shammai didn't argue that much at all. It's only better that the yeshivas argued, right? It's hard to imagine the same mission, BJ, that they're interpreting the Mishnah differently, right? Like this is the Mishnah. This is the Mishnah. I mean, right? Meaning, if let's say it couldn't happen, it's pretty rare. We definitely don't want to assume that, right? Unless we're really stuck. Otherwise, listen, this is the Mishnah. They're both arguing over what appears to be the same egg, the same egg. So where does this egg come from? A chicken laying egg or an eating egg? Okay. So that's the... so let's... The Gemara continues. My time in the Beit Shammai. So what's the reason why Beit Shammai says it is permitted? How can you tell me that this egg is permitted? After all, mukta hi. This egg is mukta.
You compare it to like a fruit tree, did you well?
Explain.
Like a tree, like, I don't know, maybe you can't climb the tree, or, you know, the tree is mukta. I don't know if the tree is mukta or not. What's the status of a tree?
So again, what would be the status of a tree? Well, you tell me.
I would say it would be mukta.
It's mukta, right? There's no, what's it called?
Shabbos purpose.
There's no malacha in a tree, yeah?
Tree, and the oranges fall off your tree, or you want to, I don't think you can pick it, but let's say an orange falls off your tree.
When? On Shabbos, or on Yom Tov?
Yom Tov. And a clementine falls off your tree.
So you, so when Yom Tov begins, this is attached to the tree.
Yeah.
You then come in the morning and you see three freshly fallen oranges.
Yeah.
Can you eat those on Yom Tov?
Yeah.
Why? What was the status of the orange when Yom Tov began?
Mukta.
So?
So you're saying you can't?
When Yom Tov began, this was a tree.
Yeah.
In the middle of Yom Tov, this fell off a tree. So, this would be mukta, wouldn't it? Because what if the rule? Following this analogy. Right. Very good. So it'd be analogous to a fruit that falls on Yom Tov. We look at the status of this fruit. This fruit when Yom Tov began was just an extended leaf that was just orange, but it was part of the tree. This egg was just part of this chicken. This chicken is forbidden. It was it's a balei chayim. Then the egg separates on Yom Tov and comes out. This fruit falls from the tree.
Right.
Maybe you could argue that...
Can't have it.
The same reason.
Right.
That meaning that you're explaining the rationale of Beit Hillel.
Yeah.
But Beit Shammai says you can eat it, the egg. I don't know if we can eat this fruit. So you want to say that maybe Beit Shammai would argue you could eat the fruit?
You could.
Okay, we'll see if that's a proper analogy. Although, definitely, I hear your logic.
Right.
Your logic to me is very rational. Shabbos begins. Now, there could be, though, a difference between the two of them. I'll tell you the difference. What's the function? How often do fruit fall from a tree?
Probably less
frequently, but definitely with less consistency, and definitely not nearly the same, what's the word I'm looking for? Consistency, or pattern, right? Then, so you could argue that it's
more random.
It's much more random. Whereas I imagine hatching an egg is probably much more
clockwork.
Right?
Okay, fair.
Right? Fair. But definitely the analogy makes perfect sense to me. I think that's a great, and we're actually going to see that. It's actually going to come up at some point in time. So, the market, what time is it? Oh, we've run out of time. We've actually run out of time. So it's already 10:57. So what we're going to do, we're going to stop here. And we're in the middle. The Gemara is going to ask, Umay Tamayu de Beit Shammai. Muksa. How in the world could Beit Shammai justify eating this egg? It's muksa.
Yeah.
Right? And now we're going to say, Umay Kushia. Why is this a question? Dilma Beit Shammai let lu muksa. Maybe Beit Shammai doesn't hold by muksa. What is he, a heretic? Doesn't hold by muksa? So this is very important. When he says the Beit Shammai doesn't hold the muksa, doesn't mean that there's no muksa. But this is not a case of muksa. Meaning that there are certain muksas that he doesn't agree with. This is not muksa. There's a concept of muksa, and that certain things might be usher, but this isn't one of them.
Big difference.
Okay? He has to hold by muksa, but this is not muksa. Or maybe there's a maximalist and minimalist. He's not a maximalist muksa guy. He's a minimalist muksa guy. There are things that are muksa, but there's only a couple things that are really muksa. Whereas Beit Hillel makes a lot of things muksa. He's like 8 years old. Everything's muksa. This is muksa. I'm just kidding, right? Okay? Yes, this is an exception that we see the Beit Shammai is more lenient than Beit Hillel. So, okay, let's stop there. It's 10:58. Emerge Hashem next week. Same time and same place. Thanks for coming, everybody.